Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
It's very confusing. I like it much better to be able to say this is who's going to be the Republican Party, Independent Party, and Democratic Party.
Today is Alaska's first ever ranked choice election, but not all voters like the new system. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 16th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, 3 people were stabbed in Ketchikan and police are searching for a motive.
Sometimes these things are predictable or at least seem to make some kind of sense. These just don't.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
3 people were stabbed in 2 separate incidents in Ketchikan over the weekend, according to police. Police say none of the victims knew their attackers. The first stabbing happened on Saturday at a restaurant inside the Landing Hotel. In a sworn statement to the court, police say 45-year-old Stephen Smith of Salem, Oregon, attacked a man as the victim was putting condiments on his breakfast. Smith allegedly stabbed the victim in the face 3 times and punched him, breaking his nose. Police say the man needed 16 stitches. Ketchikan Police Lieutenant Andy Bernstein says there's no clear motive for the attack.
No significant or any true background that would show that these gentlemen knew each other or had any kind of relationship. Certainly, these investigations are ongoing. But to this point, again, no true motive in that case has been established.
Smith is charged with felony first-degree assault in the case and is in custody in lieu of a $150,000 cash bond. In another case, police arrested a man on Sunday after they say he stabbed 2 people at Ketchikan's Plaza Mall. Police identify the suspect as 31-year-old Brian Calhoun of Ketchikan. In court filings, police say Calhoun pulled a knife, threatened to harm himself, and then tackled a nearby woman who was waiting for a cab outside the mall. Bernstein says a friend of the woman tried to help and was hurt as well.
Our officers contacted Mr. Calhoun, placed him into custody without incident, and placed him under arrest.
Police say Calhoun stabbed both victims in the back, and the man also sustained injuries to one of his hands. None of the injuries were reported to be life-threatening. Calhoun is facing felony first-degree assault charges. He's in custody at Ketchikan's jail, and bail is set at $100,000. Like the incident at the Landing, Bernstein says there's no clear motive and the victim and suspect don't seem to know each other.
You know, at least with people that know each other, sometimes these things are predictable or at least seem to make some kind of sense, especially to the outside world looking in. These just don't.
He says there's not yet any evidence to suggest that the 2 incidents are connected to each other. Well, Alaskans headed to the polls today for their first chance to rank candidates in the special U.S. House general election, as well as to decide who will be ranked in November. It's 2 elections on 1 piece of paper. On one side, it's the primary election where voters pick 1 candidate for governor, U.S. House, U.S. Senate, and state House and state Senate seats. On the flip side, there's the ranked choice election to decide who will fill the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early visited several polling locations and has more.
Thousands of Alaskans have already voted by mail or went to the polls early ahead of Election Day. Still, on Tuesday morning, voter turnout was pretty steady at Turnagain United Methodist Church in Anchorage.
We've had 101 people who have come through and voted already.
Poll worker Deborah Caldera said by 9:30, more than 130 ballots had been cast. Caldera has been a poll worker for 10 years, and she says even with the new voting system, turnout is about the same.
This
busy precinct, and one of the busiest in the city. And I would say that we have about what we had normally here.
Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer, who's charged with overseeing Alaska elections, was out Tuesday morning visiting polling locations. He said Alaska's first ranked choice election seemed to be going okay.
You know, some places said it wasn't a problem, and others said, yeah, there was some confusion.
In addition to the new system, Meyer says some voters have to contend with new district boundaries and a bunch of new polling locations. But he says everything seems to be running as smooth as past elections he's overseen.
Yeah, whenever you have over 2,000 basically volunteers, there's going to be some startup issues, like I said, in the morning in particular. And then once you get up and running, things go fairly smoothly, or they work themselves out.
In the primary, voters pick one choice. The top four candidates who receive the most votes move on to the November general election. Meyer said since nearly all legislative races have less than four candidates, the stakes are much lower for those candidates.
The big one that everybody's going to, of course, be watching is the interim fill of Don Young's seat. Because now all of a sudden they become the incumbent.
After Young died in March, a special primary was held to determine which candidates would compete to replace him. In Tuesday's ranked choice special general election, voters will rank either Sarah Palin, Nick Begich, Mary Peltola, or one of six registered write-in candidates. Not everyone is a fan of the new ranked choice system. Outside the elections office polling area in Anchorage, Nancy Tinney described herself as an independent voter. She said she's worried that ranked choice will split the vote on certain candidates.
So people will go in there and they'll rank all these people, and what it's doing is taking away a percentage. Why not just yes or no for one person?
In the ranked choice election, voters rank their preferences of the candidates who are running. If a candidate receives less than 50% of first-round votes, then the last-place person is eliminated and their second-place votes go to the remaining candidates. Barbara Hole is another voter who isn't very supportive of ranked choice voting. She voted at the same place as Tinney and said she was taken aback by the vast number of names on her ballot. There are 22 candidates running in just the U.S. House primary, 19 for the U.S. Senate, and 10 candidates for governor.
It's very confusing. I like it much better to be able to say this is who's going to be the Republican Party, Independent Party, and Democratic Party. I like the old school method much better.
Unlike Tinney, Hole did rank several candidates on her ballot. While voters get used to a new system with just one race to call, Meyer is hopeful that it'll be an easy introduction to the new voting method. He calls it a test run for ranked choice voting in November. Polls will be open until 8 p.m. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage parents scramble to arrange carpools during a district-wide bus driver shortage.
If I could have a slightly smaller PFD and guarantee that I'd have a bus for my child to go to and from school every day, then I'd take that in a heartbeat.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play clean go, removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Parents in the Anchorage School District are scrambling to figure out how they'll get their kids to school after district officials announced that there aren't enough bus drivers to transport all students. Families are turning to social media in search of carpools and other alternatives. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports.
Lindsay Taylor lives in Chugiak and works in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Her daughter is about to start her junior year at Chugiak High School. Without bus service for 6 weeks, Taylor will have to drive her.
So I'm going to be 2 hours late to work and have to leave 2 hours early. So I get to work 4 out of my 8 hours, which, like, I'll probably get fired.
Taylor isn't alone. Parents throughout the district are scrambling to find transportation for their kids after the district announced a severe bus driver shortage. The district divided bus routes into 3 cohorts. Each cohort will have 3 weeks with bus service and 6 without. Many parents are taking to social media to try and arrange carpools with nearby families. Emily Wetton hosted a live brainstorming session on Facebook Monday night. Taylor joined.
Have you made any connections yet by searching either on the search bar or through the topics section?
You know, I looked a little bit, but there's not a whole lot of Chugiak people.
Wetton helps run a new Facebook group for Anchorage parents seeking carpools. Since it started on Friday night, it's grown to more than 850 members. Most are parents requesting or offering rides to and from school. Others are trying to arrange groups of students to walk or ride bikes together to school. Teachers and school staff are also in the group, posting about after-school programs and even offering to drive kids themselves. Wetton said arranging carpools is especially challenging for parents of young children who've spent their first 2 years of school in a pandemic.
These strong communities that used to exist prior to COVID, there's cracks in them. You know, we're not having sports and we're doing virtual school, and all that compounds to all of a sudden, you don't know your neighbors.
Wetton says many parents have suggested that full-time bus service should go to schools with the highest need, such as Title I schools. Caitlin Peterson worries about that group too. She's a private tutor in Anchorage, and she set up the Facebook group after parents asked her for help finding carpools.
As a private tutor, I see parents that are on the upper end of the income scale. If my parents are worrying about this, this is a crisis for parents in the lower income group.
District leaders say the rotating schedule is the most equitable option because it provides some transportation to all students rather than no transportation for 12,000 of them. But Peterson says Title I students stand to lose much more than in-person instruction time. School is also the place where they get their meals, internet access, and time with other trusted adults. Peterson says she's worried about increased absences among all students, regardless of income, and what that could mean for enrollment in Anchorage's public schools.
The poorer educational outcomes that we have, the more that the ones who want to privatize schools are going to look at it and say, oh, look at these public schools, they're failing. Well, yeah, they're failing because we haven't properly funded them.
Philip Walters agrees. He's a parent in the district, and he teaches band at Greening Middle School. He says he hopes this demonstrates the importance of school funding at the state level.
When people think about funding schools, they think about paying teachers, and they think about buying books and materials and stuff like that for students, but they don't necessarily always think about bus drivers.
The amount of state money the district gets per student hasn't increased since 2017. Walters says it was only a matter of time before that started impacting basic school services like busing.
If I could have a slightly smaller PFD and guarantee that I'd have a bus for my child to go to and from school every day, then I'd take that in a heartbeat.
For now, Walters says his in-laws will drive his kids to school for the next few weeks. But he knows not many parents have that option. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
The Bureau of Land Management held the second of two virtual public comment meetings last night on a revised environmental review of ConocoPhillips' proposed Willow oil and gas project in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the mega North Slope Energy Project is drawing mixed feedback.
The Bureau of Land Management's supplemental environmental impact statement was prompted by a decision in a lawsuit brought by environmental groups that vacated a 2022 approval of a ConocoPhillips development plan for the Willow Project. BLM Willow Project manager Stephanie Rice introduced Monday night's public comment session by providing some history. She said the supplemental EIS addresses issues identified in the U.S. District Court ruling.
The court specifically stated that BLM's assumption that ConocoPhillips had the right to extract all possible oil and gas from its leases was flawed, and BLM failed to consider the statutory directive that it give maximum protection to surface values in the Teshipuk Lake Special Area.
The Teshipuk Special Area was designated to protect caribou birds and their habitats, and Rice outlined a new development alternative in the supplemental EIS, which would lessen surface impacts there.
This alternative would reduce the overall amount of infrastructure, such as the gravel footprint, miles of gravel road, and miles of pipeline that may impede caribou movement and impact subsistence users.
Rice said Alternative E reduces the amount of gravel areas like roads and drilling pads in the area by more than 40% compared to ConocoPhillips' original plan. Willow is projected to produce up to 629 million barrels of oil during the field's 30-year lifespan. And in accordance with the court ruling, Rice said the supplemental EIS also models greenhouse gas emissions from consumption of willow oil in foreign countries.
The model found that greenhouse gas emissions from foreign oil consumption would increase due to willow production under all action alternatives. However, the total greenhouse gas emissions under alternative E as an ECHO are lower than all the other action alternatives.
17 people commented on the supplemental Willow Project EIS during last night's virtual public meeting. 10 were opposed to the development and 7 were in favor. Those who supported the project pointed to economic benefits and the importance of domestic energy production. Rebecca Logan, CEO of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance Trade Group, spoke in favor of Alternative E while acknowledging the project's global impacts.
With global oil demand projected to increase over the next decade, it is critical to take a BIMBY, better in my backyard, and not a NIMBY approach to development. Willow will be among the most technologically advanced and environmentally and socially responsible oil produced in this world.
Those who spoke in opposition to Willow focused on the big picture, saying the world is at a critical juncture when it comes to dependence on fossil fuels and the resulting impact on the Earth's climate. Sonia Akivgak is with the group Sovereign Inupiaq for a Living Arctic, but spoke on her own behalf.
For the first time in history, we are at a time where people globally have seen the violent impacts of the climate emergency, and we still have time to correct our behavior before it is too late to prevent the worst of the climate disaster. It is not a belief that the fossil fuel industry is detrimental to the survival of living beings. It is a fact.
North Slope residents have the opportunity to address the Willow Project Supplemental EIS in person during BLM meetings in Nuiqsut tonight and Utqiagvik on the 22nd. Additional virtual sessions are happening tomorrow and Thursday. The 45-day public comment period is scheduled to close August 29th. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
A family dog was killed while defending its owners from a pack of wolves at a Metlakatla beach last weekend. The dog's owner says the event was not only terrifying, but proof that the local packs are getting bolder. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
Something didn't feel right when Brittany Hayward and her teenage daughter arrived at Moss Point.
You know, I had asked my daughter, you know, where are the birds? Why are there no birds? There's no noise. And, you know, she kind of joked and was like, oh, the Kushtikov's watching us. And I was like, no, you know, something doesn't feel right. I feel like we're being watched.
Hayward had three dogs with her on the beach. That included Roscoe, a Ridgeback Mastiff mix, Smokey, a German Shepherd Husky mix, and Cardi B, a Jack Russell mixed with Husky and Pitbull.
Our dogs were on high alert as soon as they got down there. They kept looking and you know, pointing and looking off to the bushes, and they were just really uneasy.
Hayward says she couldn't see much of anything from where she stood. She was behind mounds of sand and rock that form on the beach at low tide. Smokey was watching over them, standing on one of the mounds. She remembers telling her daughter she felt like a sitting duck. When Hayward turned around, she saw Smokey chasing after a wolf.
And I start screaming, just screaming for my dog to come back. And in the matter of minutes, felt like minutes, this wolf was luring him, and they were chasing each other. He was chasing the wolf away.
Hayward says she scooped up Cardi B. She kept screaming and standing her ground, just as state wildlife officials advise.
I can't see where these other wolves are. We're behind the wolves.
But her screams didn't faze the wolf. Instead, she says the animal simply cocked its head and stepped toward her. That's when Smokey and Roscoe broke loose.
And Roscoe took off after the wolf, and Roscoe got hold of the wolf
and they tumbled into the rocks. And when they started fighting, two more came out of the woods and started attacking him. And another one came from the point.
Hayward says Smokey came back and she managed to get him leashed. She told her daughter to take him and run to the car. Hayward had hoped that the car's horn might scare the pack away.
And she was like, I can't leave you. And I just had to scream at her, run.
But Roscoe kept fighting. With Cardi B still in her arms, Hayward, still screaming, watched as Roscoe tumbled with the wolves. He pinned one down in the rocks. That's when Hayward took off. She drove her car down to the beach honking, both trying to scare the pack and call for help. But she says the wolves didn't seem to care. She got out of the car to go get help, but something had already changed on the beach.
It went completely silent. I couldn't hear them.
Hayward's husband, police officers, and other Metlakatla residents tried to look for Roscoe, but the wolves kept guarding the beach, howling late into the night. Searchers combed the area until about 1 a.m. the following morning. A fish and wildlife officer found Roscoe's remains and brought him home. Hayward says he fought hard defending his family. She says that Roscoe died of a puncture wound to his stomach. This wasn't Hayward's first encounter with wolves. Smokey chased him away during a recent family camping trip, and Hayward thinks something needs to be done.
I think that they need to be thinned out. I think that the fact that they were not scared of me is pretty dangerous.
Officials in Metlakatla issued a notice to residents on Monday warning them that wolves had been spotted in the Moss Point and Point Davison areas. Hayward says it's important to stay vigilant when out and about.
I think that people just need to trust your instinct and don't talk yourself out of that feeling. If you feel like you're being watched, this is still Alaska and you probably are being stalked. Absolutely.
Hayward says beachgoers should also carry bear spray or some other kind of weapon, just in case. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Alaska had its driest June on record this year, but it's been mostly rainy, especially in South Central, since about the first week of July. National Weather Service climate researcher Brian Brettschneider says that's when a low-pressure system set up over the Bering Sea, causing moisture to flow from the Pacific Ocean into Alaska. Brettschneider, back for our Ask a Climatologist segment, says the resulting days upon days of rain plus a glut of precipitation earlier in the year have amounted to the wettest year on record in Anchorage through mid-August, even when factoring in the drought conditions earlier this summer. On top of that, in typically rainy southeast Alaska, they're expecting to get hit with an atmospheric river this week. And Brettschneider says if the shift to rainy weather seems earlier than usual, that's because it was.
Well, we typically see, you know, the rainy season set in toward the end of July. I mean, June is a dry month. July is fairly dry, but wetter. And August is a pretty wet month everywhere. So the timing of when the rainy season sets in, it's not usually as dramatic as, say, it is for the monsoons of Southern Asia or the southwestern lower 48. But there usually is a pretty dramatic rise in precipitation over a week or 10-day period. And it certainly happened about 2 weeks early this year. But we've also had a number of years where the rainy season set in this early or even earlier. And so it's not exceptional, but it was definitely welcome this year for the fires.
Yeah, definitely. Nice to see the fire danger signs flip to the green low danger and stay there. Tell me more about this atmospheric river that's going to hit southeast. How big of a deal is that? Would you expect to see landslides as a result? What do you think?
Well, we never forecast landslides, but landslides are certainly more frequent and more common when there is heavy rain or right after heavy rainfall events. So I want to be clear that there's not a forecast for that. But there is a potent atmospheric river that's going to rain pretty hard for most of southeast Alaska for 24 or 36 hours in most places. And it's forecast to drop 2 to 3, 4 inches of rain in spots. And that's a lot for 36 hours. So we should definitely expect rises in streams and an increased chance of landslides.
And we should mention just recently here in the Mat-Su, there was some flood danger as well, right? The local creeks and rivers were either at Bankful or I think in maybe one case above, right?
Yeah, there's been a series of really high total precipitation events. Of course, here in Anchorage, we had 1.61 inches in 24 hours, which is our heaviest 24-hour precipitation in 18 years. Up in the valley, they had a couple of very high-end precipitation events too, over Palmer and to the west and northwest. You know, a station at Hatchet Pass had 5 inches in like one day. So those are going to have impacts on local streams and create localized flooding conditions, and that's definitely what we saw.
So, as we're speaking, today is election day in Alaska. The special general election for U.S. House, and then also the primary election for the general election in November. And considering it's been rainy here recently, and it is today, does that discourage people from going out to the polls? Do you know?
So I looked into this a little bit, and there's a body of research that has looked at correlations between the weather and election participation. And it's one of those things where people think that, oh yeah, well this, boy, if it's bad weather, it's really going to keep people away from voting. And it turns out there's a very, very small effect, but it's almost statistically insignificant. To the extent that there is an effect, it does tend to keep people from voting. But again, that's a lot of noise in perhaps a pretty small signal. So we shouldn't expect that the weather is going to have a material effect on voter turnout.
And I'm assuming those are broader numbers than just in Alaska, where, of course, we are much stronger and hardier than anyone else, right?
That is correct. We, you know, walk uphill both ways to the voting booth in the snow and blizzard conditions and so on.
So, Brian, what are we looking at going forward here?
It looks like over the next couple of weeks, we actually may break free from our cool and wet pattern. So perhaps a late August, early September, warm, dry spell is in our future. And that's always a tough call, you know, 2 weeks out, 2.5 weeks out. But the signals are looking increasingly strong that high pressure is going to develop over the state and perhaps give us a break from the cool, wet pattern we've been stuck in for the last 5 or 6 weeks.
That was Brian Brett Schneider, a climate researcher with the National Weather Service. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Spotify now, so you can check us out there. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Wesley Early in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer. Remember, polls are open until 8 tonight if you still need to get out and vote. I did. I'm Casey Grove, and good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank, Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.